Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawanda Henry Beattie. And yeah, welcome once again to a special episode of the best political podcast in the country. And today, indeed, the world maybe.
indeed. Today is the 8th of April, 2017. And we have a guest with us in studio today. He is the ZANPF UK branch chairperson, Mr. Nick Mangwana. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. I prefer comrade.
Comrade.
I was about to say, don't they prefer him? They're comrades there in ZANPF.
Don't worry, we are comrade. Maybe Chris is trying to be neutral, if he is neutral at all, but let's go.
But can I also be comrade so that you don't co-opt the word for your party?
No, actually, comrade is a brand, so you really, really have to buy into it. If you end the stripes, yes, we can call you comrade.
What does one have to do to end the stripes?
Let me speak in our revolutionary abstract. One has to be a revolutionary. That's it.
But I'm being revolutionary to against the revolutionaries. So does that not make me
counter revolutionaries are not comrades?
but surely maybe if I espouse the socialist values whence the word originated from, perhaps I'm a true comrade.
No. You know, definitions are contextual, so we can't append or associate it with socialism per se. As you know, that the word comrade itself means either a friend or a member of a fraternity. So if you are a member of ZANPF fraternity, then you are a comrade or our ZANPF fraternity.
But what if I'm a member of the Zimbabwean fraternity?
So all Zimbabweans are comrades? You are a compatriot. You are a compatriot and not a comrade. You are a member of my fraternity, my brother.
No.
Okay, let's... Okay, Comrade Mangwana, you are, as I said, the chairperson of the ZANPF UK branch. I think just to give us more background on yourself, what is it that you do and how is it that you came to be part of ZANPF?
Long story, but I will try to summarize it. I'm the ZANPF representative in Europe. I'm based in the UK. We expanded from Europe... from the UK to Europe. So what I do is represent the party interests in the European shows. I'm also part of the team that's building ZANPF structures in the diaspora. That's what I do. I represent party interests. I give the party perspective where it's needed. As you know, in the last 17 or so years, our party and government has been enduring a lot of bashing in the media. There is only so much an embassy can do within the ambit of diplomatic courtesy. So, but there's a lot that we can do as a part, which is not bound by diplomatic courtesy or protocol. So that's what we are. We represent the party of government. By so doing, we also, we tell the Zimbabwean story in our own words. We tell the ZANPF story in our own words. That's what we do.
Okay. How big is the ZANPF branch out there in the diaspora?
It's big, quite big. I'm not going to go into numbers, obviously, for obvious reasons, because it's party database, party information is, but we are quite big. We have representatives and or representative structures or chapters in about 6 countries in Europe. Yeah. We intend, when we identify Zimbabweans in another country in Europe, we shall surely build structures in those countries as well.
You're building structures with the hope of making ZANPF diaspora or ZANPF Europe into a province in of itself, in part of the province, as like Mashonaland or Mash East or any of these other provinces for purposes of the Congress. Is that correct?
Yes and no. Let me start with a yes. the yes, in the sense that we are building ZANU-PF outside Europe, or sorry, outside Zimbabwe, external structures for the reason that a Zimbabwean remains a Zimbabwean where he is, wherever he is, remains engaged in the issues at home, remains very much attuned to what's going on, and he has a lot to contribute to the discourse, has a lot to contribute to the economy, has a lot to contribute to the progress and development of the country. So, if they need a political platform through which they to do that, that's where we are as ZANU-PF. Every party, almost every party of substance, which is in Zimbabwe, because there are quite too many of them anyway, but every party of substance has got representatives everywhere where the Zimbabweans are. So, now, where I said no was you said, you mentioned Europe. No, the diaspora party is actually covering all diaspora, including China. We are in the midst of building a structure in China, actually. We've got about 1,000 members that are there, Zimbabweans. So, like I said before...
A thousand Zimbabweans or 1,000 members of the ZANU-PF in China?
1,000 Zimbabweans who are very much resonant with the ZANU-PF philosophy and way of thinking. So that's why we are in touch with them. We are in a group. We are in a grouping with them. That's why we hope they will all take up our cards and become ZANU-PF members. So now, in terms of the external, the philosophy again is, you know, the African Union identified the diaspora as the fifth region of Africa. So Africa has got its regions, but there's one sixth region, which is the diaspora. Now, we also, by the same philosophy, we identified the diaspora as the 11th province of Zimbabwe. So all Zimbabweans are in here, in some province of some sort, whether it's a metropolitan province like Harare or Bulawayo, or in the other province, Mashingo, you name it, Mash West, Mash Central, Mash North, Mash South, whatever. But there are also Zimbabweans who are outside the country. Now, Zimbabwean's admin structure is according to province. So where do these Zimbabweans who are outside the country fit in? They fit in a province of their own. So when we talk of the 11th province, we're not only talking of ZANU-PF. We're actually talking of the country. The diaspora, the philosophy is the diaspora is the 11th province of Zimbabwe. Now, obviously, go on.
No, I'm not to cut you off. I was just reverting back to the initial question. I understand that the country and the diaspora is the 11th province, but I'm asking in terms of your work, your building structures, is this for the making of a province for ZANU-PF? Are you structure building in the same way as if I was going to Chindambuya? I would start at cell level and at ward level so that eventually I can build my provincial chairperson and things like that.
Yes, I would say in a qualified yes, in the sense that we don't build cells. We start from branch, particularly because of the sparse way in which Zimbabweans are located outside the country. The cell concept came from a village. That's where it starts from. From streets. So when if you are in Mbare, you build cells according to the street, from that street to that street. So because all these people are Zimbabweans, all these people qualify, so you go to them. But when you are in a diasporan setup, people are scattered around. So you would find that in a place, you might have, say in the United Kingdom, in Newcastle, you probably will have, I will just hazard a figure, so you probably have 300 Zimbabweans. Are you going to call that a cell? Then if you are calling that a cell, how are you going to build the branch? So we agreed with the party that when it comes to the diaspora, the model is slightly different, taking cognizance of the context in which people operate.
Okay, so but how many members do you need to have at branch level before you can say you have a province?
We do not need... Basically, our conversation with the party is not so much about how many members do we need so that we can be a province. The conversation is based on principle. The principle is that everyone in the diaspora is 11th province, which is where you drew me away from the concept, because I wanted to start with the principle, then we come to the microcosm of ZANU-PF. Now, once you are grasped the principle that wherever Zimbabweans are, they are part of this big province, which is scattered all around, called the 11th province. Now, when it comes to ZANU-PF, what it does now is to capture those people and structure them whichever the way, whichever way it deems fits to that context. So, at the end of the day, wherever they are, these people, they will have a vote. Now, we're coming back to the Congress, which you mentioned. They will have a vote in ZANU-PF's internal processes as a province. It's very difficult to... I want you to remove yourself from our local context, because it doesn't work. It doesn't work because when the Constitution says the province should meet every month, you cannot have the whole diaspora meeting every month. It's impossible as a province. How do they do that? There are people in China. There are people in South Africa. There are people in Malaysia. There are people in Singapore. There are people in India. How do we meet as a province? We don't. It's not.
We're meeting right now across the world from you, but we're having a conversation. So yes, perhaps, you know, you can find creative solutions.
Exactly. So we'll do that.
And let me let you finish before I go on to my next.
Now I've got your next question. Unless this one is not answered. But if this one is not answered, pin me down again.
I'm sure you can see where this is going, because you said that your Congress to have a vote in internal ZANU-PF politics. But what's the point of having that if they can't vote in the diaspora in the Zimbabwean national election? Is what's the point of having a ZANU-PF outside the country? What's the point of having all these structures when they don't have a vote in their national elections? What's the point of giving someone the choice of choosing a party president when they can't choose a national president? How do you reconcile yourself with that, you know, that oxymoron, that contradiction in your belief that Zimbabweans are in diaspora and 11th province, but the same government and the same party that you serve refuses to acknowledge their at least in my idea, right to vote?
Hey, that's a very long question.
In the national elections.
That's a very long question. It's not a speech. Okay, I think I got the gist. I will answer. I know. Don't worry about me. I will answer. The point I mentioned is that Zimbabweans are engaged in the processes in Zimbabwe, in the politics of Zimbabwe. Be it in the MDC or whatever. Now, if you wanted to ask me a direct question about my views on the diaspora vote, you should have done so. You didn't. You gave a speech, and you said what you thought and what I believe, which probably missed the point. So, can we roll back a bit? Then ask me my views on the diaspora vote. Then we start from there.
Okay, let me do it. I know you've spoken about it in Mashingo, at the conference end of last year, and you've written about it as well. So just, you know, what are your personal views on the issue of diaspora voting? Should the diaspora be allowed to vote in the elections?
Yes, at some point the diaspora should be allowed to vote. Right now, the diaspora is already allowed to vote. If you come here and register in Zimbabwe, you can vote. I'm a registered voter here. Now, I'm going to the question of transnational voting now, which is a different issue. But with the transnational vote, there are a lot of things that need to be in place before we get there. So in principle, there's nothing wrong with that, because every country is going towards that. So it's a new trend that people have vote for wherever they are. But with Zimbabwe is in a place where it's not yet ready. Why? Firstly, we don't have the demographics. We are Zimbabweans. We are just guessing these places. We've got so many Zimbabweans. These places have got so many Zimbabweans. People, we don't know wherever they are. Number two, we don't have a policy already in place which tells us that, okay, if for example, if we say any country that is about 1,000 Zimbabweans, I'm just hazarding a figure again, or giving a figure so that we can be able to talk. If it has got 1,000 Zimbabweans, then that country, we can put a ballot in that country. Or in terms of funding, how do we fund that particular vote? How do we secure that vote? Right now, we've got people going in the streets people are very paranoid about the votes that are happening in Zimbabwe on the ground, where they are, where they've got polling agents, where they've got observers, where they've got everybody in there. But those elections are contested. Some are contesting elections before they happen. Now imagine, we're having a diaspora vote. We're having a transnational vote in a circumstance where nothing is very clear. Nothing is clear. But so, at the conference, at the conference, I said, let's defer that conversation because there was nothing to be resolved at the conference. I did not say that conversation should not happen. We're having that conversation now, and that conversation should be had. But ask your question.
Yeah, but the thing is, for me, is that you said there is no policy. There are a lot of issues. How do we set up the systems? That conversation is not taking place. You said it should be deferred, but deferred until when? Because it seems that ZANU-PF and the government are not interested at all in there being a diaspora vote.
No, that's not correct, actually. That's not correct that we are not interested. The point I'm making is we are struggling for money right now. The country is talking about UNDP funding elections because we could not fund our own elections in 2013. Again, funds are to be sourced from organizations like ELSA. Again, UNDP was kind of involved, and there was a fight between Minister Chinamasa and then Minister Biti over who is going to fund those elections. And these are elections that are happening on the ground in Zimbabwe, with choosing a party that's going to lead on things that affect Zimbabweans right on the ground. Are we going to extend or overextend ourselves at this point when there is no fiscal space to go all the way and try to, you know, to define who is a Zimbabwean, who is supposed to vote? Is my son that I have in the UK with a British woman a Zimbabwean? Are they supposed to vote? They've never stepped in Zimbabwe. They've been there for 20 years. Is the son or the daughter which a Zimbabwean woman has with a Nigerian eligible to vote in Zimbabwe's processes? This is what I'm saying, that there is too many undefined issues to even talk about 2018. So I deferred that conversation at the conference, not forever. I said at the conference, when we were in that resolutions committee, we were not going to talk about it because it wasn't pertinent. We were talking about things that would happen in the year's time.
So how long should it be deferred for?
I said deferred at the conference. After the conference, we can talk about it. Can't we talking about it now?
Yeah, but...
Yes, we are talking about it, but what I was saying is ZANU-PF, the point Chris was making is that the government and ZANU-PF are not talking about it. We personally are speaking about it between us.
Fair.
But it seems as if time and time again the government has taken or refused to take any actions in terms of encouraging, you know, for example, the issue of dual citizenship that had to go to the courts before it was even resolved. And even now, practically, it's very difficult to be a dual citizen in Zimbabwe because the laws haven't been aligned. So if something that's already guaranteed constitutionally in black and white is already taking so much time, how are we my questions are long.
Very, very long. I'm trying to, okay, go on.
I think you are the podcast, we have a conversation.
I know.
Think if you decide that the questions are in a traditional interview manner, then you might find them a bit long.
It's okay. I'm just being a prat. Don't worry. I'm kidding.
But the point is that, you know, for all intents and purposes, it doesn't seem as if a diaspora vote is something that ZANU-PF is even interested in, or even willing to begin discussing. And, you know, the problems that you've brought up and the problems that you've spoken are all part of electoral reform that's necessary in this country and on a bigger and larger scale. But the fact is that they've been quite dismissive. So I think personally we've really exhausted that point.
I'll need to rebut your point, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Right now we are talking of 2018 elections. There is no snowball chance in hell that we can have a diaspora vote in 2018. Now, if we are going to talk about the diaspora vote, when we are contesting things on the ground towards 2018 already, we are muddying the waters. Let's have 2018 gone. When it comes to 2023, we can build that conversation from there. As I said, there is no fiscal space. 17 million, people are wondering where 17 million, which is involved in the BVR, came from. So
The diaspora vote, comes from a section in the new constitution which came in 2013.
If this
government was interested, if the right for the government to ensure that its citizens have conditions to vote can be interpreted as saying that even people in the diaspora are meant to be allowed to vote. Do you disagree?
I don't disagree
in fact,
I very much agree.
I'm actually quoting your own words in your section, you know, so I don't know where you disagree.
That's what I'm saying. I'm agreeing.
So my point is that constitution came in 2013. So we can say, could fine, 2018 years was fika, and nothing has happened. But we can't say that let's defer it because we've known all these things from way before, and people have been speaking about these things from way before.
Changamire wangu. Zvandirikukumbira kutaura ndezvekuti. Ndati constitution inoti muZimbabwean wese ane kodzero yokuuya opinda muchirongwa chesarudzo munyika muno handiti mukuzipo Zimbabwe iyo constitution yamataura inozoti an act of parliament should be in place to define. So we are saying the act of parliament which is there right now, the electoral act, yaka define kuti my elections edu anoitikira kuma wards, and it my polling stations are their ward based. Now we don't have wards outside the country. My wards is in Zimbabwe. That's why I'm saying even mukabva ku Sydney kwa Muriko kwa mukauya zvenyu ku Zimbabwe munogona kuvota mu ward. This is what we have right now. So every Zimbabwean ane kodzero yekuvota in those elections. Unlike other countries, even uchigara outside the country ukauya kunyika kwacho, you would not vote if you had stayed out of that country for this period. So the constitution I'm kutaura is not putting an obligation on the government of Zimbabwe to follow every Zimbabwean wherever they are with a ballot box. There is nothing like that. So in terms of that, the Zimbabwean government is not in breach of the constitution. But having said that, we're talking of moral principles here. That's why I'm saying, yes, should the Zimbabwean government follow people wherever they are at some point with a ballot? Yes, in principle, but not as a legal obligation. It doesn't have that obligation. It has got obligation to its taxpayers here, people who are resident here, people who are affected by the decisions it makes here.
Okay, let me just butt in here and say that the diaspora, you said it has an obligation to its taxpayers, yeah. But the diaspora contributes quite a lot to the economy of this country through remittances.
So and does Anglo-America contributed also?
But the thing is, these people are Zimbabweans, right?
Yes.
So it's different from...
I'm one of them.
Yes, you are one of them. You're based in the UK. Mm-hmm. You probably do contribute to through remittances.
I do.
And these people want to be a part of the political processes as well, not just giving back the through finances from where they are, though. Sometimes
I didn't say there's a problem.
Yes.
You're missing the point. Mm. The point I'm making is the context. Right now, you have no choice. But I've got a choice whether to send you money or not. I've got a choice whether to send money. Some people don't even should send anything, yeah. Right? Because the government of Zimbabwe cannot do anything about that. Mm-hmm. But if you don't pay your taxes, you end up in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So,
but Comrade Mangwana, yes, how can you associate, being a taxpayer with someone's right to vote? If I'm 18 years old and Zirombe Zwanga and Zatambwenda Basabandoga and Zimbabwe and voter, being a taxpayer has nothing to do with it. Even if you don't contribute a single cent to this country's economy, if I sell airtime at the corner of the street and I've never been paid Zimra in my life, I'm still eligible to vote. So how then do you then twist that and turn it into a situation where, whether you contribute or you don't contribute from the diaspora makes you a citizen or not? Okay. Or whether paying Zimra makes you a citizen or not. I don't see anywhere where citizenship rights are associated with the fiscal or the monetary in terms of voting.
Thank you. Yeah. Fakaoma. Nyaya iripo ndeyekuti. There is no representation without taxation. There's no taxation without representation. And it's as simple as that. United States charges taxation. Well, you know, but there's a taxation to all its citizens outside the country. And hence, no matter how long they stay outside the country, they will have to vote. They will be given a vote there. Can atisukuti some Zimbabweans are outside the country are useless. They don't have a role to play. They play a major role. They can actually take this Zimbabwe to the next step. We can actually uplift the progress of this country to the next level. This is the value of the diaspora. We have to leverage that. There's no question about that. Murukumita mistake pandrikuti nini. I don't know where particular person appoint. It's about atina fiscal space. It's about Zimbabwe in a budget of 4 billion. It's failing to collect 4 billion. And it? It's not about 4 billion. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to 4 billion. I'm going to tax or whatever. We are chasing vendors with the tax forms. But our Rototora Mario, you're talking about spread around the country, around the world, to struggle wherever Zimbabweans are. At the moment, are we saying that's a priority towards 2018? Are we saying that's a priority?
I think we're maybe getting bogged down in semantics. What is a priority towards 2018 is the fact that, you know, giving Zimbabweans the opportunity to vote, and if we agree that there's more than 4 million of us in diaspora, you have to accept that if it's not a priority to you, it's certainly a priority to a lot of people.
But okay,
who you purport to represent as ZANU-PF UK.
Let me just say something here. In the sense that, on Comrade Mangwana's point that for 2018, the space actually might not be there to put through in terms of finances. The government already, and it's $50 million for the BVR kits. That's a very contentious issue. If we 17. Are then, is it 17?
Yeah, 17.
Okay.
Which is the contentious one. Yeah.
If we are then to include in it the amount for voter awareness, how the policy is going to work for diaspora, for 2018 the period might be so short. But I think we can all agree that that conversation needs to happen. It needs to start happening now, even if it is to be for 2023.
That's not a problem.
It needs to happen at government level. It needs to happen at a policy level. It needs to happen, you know, quite in a structured manner to ensure that these things actually do come out to an eventuality, that one day there is transnational voting. I think one of things...
No, I agree with you, Chris.
One of the things you mentioned... was people selling airtime on the streets and the government's taxing of vendors and that sort of thing. And I want to bring it to the issue of Zim Asset and the ZANU-PF manifesto and what it said it was going to do in the 2013 elections, what it has achieved, and, you know, where we are now. One of the things, and some of our listeners asked this question, is, you know, ZANU-PF promised 2.2 million jobs in 2013, and that is something that it has not delivered on up to now. We are now a year away from the 2018 elections, and in the 4 years now, that hasn't happened. So how can the citizens trust ZANU-PF manifesto and for it to deliver on its mandate when, you know, it's already set this precedent?
It's not a broken promise. They literally, almost every party has had a broken manifesto. The Conservatives in Britain said they would not charge certain tuition fees to universities. They reversed and actually made a policy against that. The Zimbabwean government did not reverse a policy. It's still making an effort. The 2.2 million jobs was aspirational. The government, the ZANU-PF, aspired to produce 2.265 million jobs. And it said how it was going to do that. It said they will create jobs in agriculture, and it said so many jobs. And then it identified so many jobs in mining. Those jobs in agriculture, okay, there was drought, but now we're actually getting people employed in agriculture right now because of commercial farming. A lot of people are there. We are not, I know us urbanites, we don't consider those people in employment, but that's part of the jobs we talked about. Once we put the equipment we need to put in mining and all the support that we need in small-scale mining, it will absorb some of the unemployed people. Yes, come to urban areas. Yeah, we're struggling because the industry is not, our industry is not picking up, and that's much of a struggle. But we cannot say we totally failed there. Aspirational, yes, we didn't meet it. We did not deliver on Zimmer said due to different challenges, including not getting funding. But we have put in the enablers, the infrastructure development which we have done. Come on, let's talk about what was happening in 2013. How much load shedding was happening? Now, how much load shedding is happening in Harare or in Zimbabwe, pretty much? There's a good supply of electricity. That's a deliverable from Zimmer said. We're going to have a bumper harvest. Food and security, cluster 4. We're going to deliver that. And even for 3 years to come. So that's the massive delivering. We said we have infrastructure development. The dualization of roads is happening. It's not happening fast enough. Yes, we're having potholes. They are areas of failure. They are areas of success. But it's not a total failure. Did Zimmer said achieve 100%? No, it didn't. It will it achieve 100%? No, it won't. We'll review it. It won't, definitely. But it will achieve certain aspects of Zimmer said are achieving.
I don't even know where to begin. I perhaps we can let's focus on the jobs. Instead of creating jobs, there's been a negative growth and negative growth in jobs. You know, projected growth in all those sectors is based on the aspirations of Zim Asset has almost been the exact opposite of what was intended. So I don't see how you can then turn around and say, oh, we're going to absorb some jobs in the agricultural sector, which are seasonal jobs. There's no new agricultural jobs really being created that are going to provide long-term entertainment.
Employment.
Sorry.
Okay.
Chris just sent me a message and said that but realistically, comrade, I know you have to play the party line, but I don't think that anyone, even in their most optimistic state, can really say that this message has even, you know, been even successful. Your key drivers for projected growth targets, your first one was the mining sector, and comparing mining in Zimbabwe from the previous period it was before, you know, all these things happened, including bringing companies into one, all these things, it's now a dead sector comparatively. Agricultural sector, I mean, yeah, we've had rains and you spoke about command agriculture. It's one of those things that even your own government ministers can't agree on how successful this policy was. So how are you going to have us believe now that it was a bumper harvest when your ministers are contradicting each other left, right and center? The vice president will say one thing, the minister of agriculture will say one thing, another minister there will say one thing. So until Tawana, the grain in the granaries,
why don't we go with what the president says then? The president says it's going to be a bumper harvest. So let's forget about the ministers. Let's talk about the head of the executive.
But the president is the one. The president is the one who delivered the Zimmer Asset speech twice, even.
Just to make sure we heard it.
So he was also the one who misled us on Zimmer Asset. So I don't have any reason particularly to believe him any more than any other regular Zimbabwean,
fair because enough.
The president is just a citizen of this country. And Nyaye Kuti, the president, he's just a regular citizen of this country as well.
But Kai, you said you were talking about the executive, you were talking about the split in the executive. I'm only saying, you are saying my ministers are not congruent. So I'm saying, okay, forget about the ministers, let's talk about the president. And it just pretty much based on your point, which was right, that there's a bit of discord coming from the cabinet. So I'm saying, okay, let's forget about the contestations between the ministers. That's all. That was the point made. But I take your point that you have got a position on the president. That's your entitlement.
I don't have a position on.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, obviously.
It doesn't matter.
He's
the first citizen.
Getting back.
Yeah, go on.
You may call him the first citizen, but he's a citizen just like you and me.
His office
entitles him to certain privileges, but at the end of the day, he's governed by the same constitution that we're all governed by.
I think we're digressing. Okay, let's get on to your points.
The point was made a long time ago is okay. that we can't be overly optimistic and about this
can't.
Document.
No, it's not. It's
and
all about
the
document.
Is, going into 2018, we're talking about the coming manifesto and the ZANU-PF manifesto itself. How is anyone, even me, how are you going to convince any of us that ZANU-PF has any solution to the problems that are actually we're facing as a country and as people?
We put enablers in place. That was the key thing that we did. If you look at the whole point is that the government is not the one that has to employ you. Any government is a civil servant. And we're told how to reduce. But what we need to do is to put enablers in place so that the economy can boom and so that private sector can boom. Yes, there has to be concordance between private sector and the public sector and the government. Right. So the government's role is to make sure the environment is conducive for private sector to flourish.
Would you say that the environment is conducive for private sector to flourish right now?
No.
And so basically these enablers that the government has put in haven't actually yielded anything?
They are in the process of yielding. That's one. Because obviously Zimbabwe actually has got one of the great communication networks. Quite uncensored. I've spent quite a lot of time in Addis Ababa. You cannot access a lot of things. I've spent time in Dubai. You can't access a lot of things, but in Zimbabwe, pretty much you get whatever you want. You can communicate very easily, almost in every part of the country.
Until that one time, our Facebook was shut down for a day.
It wasn't even a day. There was just a lapse in the system. But
we have one TV station in our country.
That's a travesty.
You talk about.
I've considered that point. That's a travesty. I said that's a travesty. So let's go to the next one. Well, because there are points that we agree on, right? We don't have to debate over those ones. We can debate on the ones that we disagree on. When I concede a point, acknowledge that I've conceded a point. But the thing is,
yes.
You have got a narrative. Even if I concede a point, you would still want to come and give a speech over that narrative, which I understand. It makes a conversation. But there are things that I conceded. I didn't say Zimbabwe was an outstanding success. I said they are success stories and they are failures. That I said. And I pointed what I said to be the success stories. If you wanted to tackle me on those. I said we've got better electricity output now than we had in 2013 when we started this Zim asset. Is that fair? Is that true or not?
One could argue, though, on the issue of electricity that it's because a lot of our industries are inactive. So there's not a lot of electricity going to those areas. Industrial areas, and then it can now supply homes and that sort of
no,
places.
No, that's not true. But that's a good point, but not a true one in this particular case. Not a valid.
And also, our electricity generation is being helped by projects such as the DEMA diesel plant,
which is part of Zimbabwe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the emergency plant, controversial as you want to, that's where you're going. Fine, controversial as it is.
If we get into it, I concede that the electricity situation
right.
is certainly.
So let's go to the next one. That's a this massive success. I think on that one we've got a consensus.
It must be qualified with the fact that
success
that
is always qualified. We are getting into nuances of success. But we're saying Zim asset in this particular case, when it comes to electricity supply, it was a success. Why is electricity supply important? Because industry it runs on electricity and power and energy. So it's an enabler. So can all actually for a factory manage? Chifurash.
But in the same period that they've sorted the electricity supply out, Avar.
Yes.
There's been deindustrialization in the same period, so it can't be an enabler when the same environment that's creating electricity creation is taking away.
I'm kidding. Unless you have a problem with that, then we can all turn very serious and say, okay, fine. Now let's talk
No.
Okay. So we can have banter. So, it's part of banter. Okay? I was saying, tabaku electricity, kuma roads kuna problem. But dualization, its transport network is very important for delivering things. To change my industry, capacity utilization in my industries, it has increased, it has improved. Why? Because the structural instrument 64 of 2016, capacity much more. A lot of industry average capacity utilization, I think capacity utilization is around 56 to 60%. Yama industries compared to 2013, there has been an improvement. But I'm not saying there's been a boom. No, I'm not. Because there's none. Because kana kanga kwaita boom vanenge vakabzobwa into employment vesava. Yes, vanwana vakupinda mabasa vakupinda vachino part time. But part time jobs are part of employment. Mukaenda kuma countries akaita sana America na US, neiko ko Australia kwa Morocco. Munoona kuti vanhu vanoita part time job, vanotonzi vanosevenza. Vanhu vanosevenza nama agency, vanotonzi vanosevenza. Oh, that's his work. But muri kudismiss vanhu vakumaningi vanhu kuti ma seasonal jobs. That's employment. Vanhu vakuma prize ivavo. That's part of employment. Tasema my definitions. The first world. Kuna yoma seasonal jobs. And he entered kuma farms as well. Australia particularly. That's employment. Kuma car industry. Kuna wanuti kana wakarisiva in order. Say yes, so many kids. Wanu vada iza wanu. Wo absorba. Handu makona ndusa ka my employment figures. Achinda up and down. Obama payens 8.3. Yenzo 8.3 this month. Zunzi next month ya dropper. Why? Because those are seasonal jobs.
But
cannot dismiss that employment city because are in a job security forever. That's employment.
I don't know. I feel like we can't compare. I don't even know if apples and oranges in this situation. I understand the point you're trying to make, but I'm just saying, Guti, it's disingenuous to compare seasonal employment in America to seasonal employment in Zimbabwe, because basari muno aru shanda Zimbabwe seasonally iroro uchengeta muri dzakawanda.
Hello,
I'm here. I think,
yeah, even if it's a Mexican ajamba zvake border or something like that. Saka my point is, I understand what you want to get with the semantics
realistically, casual work is work.
I agree with you, but okay. I'm saying in the Zimbabwean context, casual work, it cannot be said to be pushing towards as it is success, which is what you're trying to foist upon us. It's not true.
I'm not foisting anything upon you. I don't know what kuti muti tomboti panapa tiri kuirana ndofana kuti ZANU-PF was a total failure. ZINAMASET was a total failure. Tawirana. Ndiri kuti inini muma and so unsuccessful stories tinema success stories. Tikama break it down. Tiri kuti isusu hakuna ngonzi the 2.265 million jobs akanyatsonzi ku agriculture kuno expect kuno employ first year kuno employ so many, second year, third year, fourth year. Vanhu vazhinji vanotaura about 2.65 million jobs or 2.2 million jobs, as people say, havana kuverenga ZANU-PF manifesto. It's inongori street lingo iri kungotaurawo zvayo, yangori sham inoshandiswa to bash us nayo. Tatimukadzokera mumaninga acho iwayo, even word is not casual workers ririmo. Handisi kutiraya kupinda mumanyuwanzisi akawanda, but ndiri kutiraya kukuudzai kuti tine masuccess stories nema not so success stories. Even vekuagriculture vakabvuma masectors acho ndiwaya. Kune vaifanira kubatsirwa nemakambanisi anenge aleverajwa anga ari kuindigenizwa. That did not succeed. We know macontestations akaitika namacontroversies in the indigenization of our economy. So that was not a success story. But ndiri kuti inini pamuri kutotaura izvi vanadema ivavo, handi kuna vanhu vakaemployiwa kuna nadema kwacho. Kwamuti kwatiri kutaura kuti Kariba West, handi Kariba West kuna vanhu vakaemployiwa ikoko. Patiri kutaura kuti Hwange yakushanda, ma thermal stations akasimuka kuBulawayo, Komunyati thermal station, and people are being employed there. The whole chain pamuno provider energy. Then tikaenda kuma industry, but tikaenda mu other infrastructure development, which is road building. Tikapinda mu dualization, kuna vanhu vanoemployiwa imomo, be it seasonal casual workers or whatever, but those who are employed kuna zvema permanent engineers. But hatisi kuramba kuti there is thinning. Kuna vanhu vakabuda mabasa hobo, especially in the court case yakaitwa nana vachamisa iyeye, vakadzingisa vanhu vakawanda basa. But zvinoitika. Ndo chipeta chacho, sometimes unongoita kuita muroi wapikwa, a hired gun. So these things happen, but kunema success stories. Did Zim Asset achieve all its intended outcomes? No, it did not, and it hasn't. Will it achieve? Because yes, Rwanda a year and a half was in October, kind of 2013, isn't it? 2018. No, it's off target, and we've said that, and I've said it. But is it a total failure? Not by any means. That's my point.
So, what can people do to? What is it that ZANU-PF is going to do to inspire confidence for people in the 2018 election? Because he has said that Zim Asset was not a complete success, that there were a lot of failures, that it's off track, and that, you know, by the time it's supposed to come to completion, they wouldn't have met their targets. So how can people, you know, trust that if we vote in this government, they will then deliver on those targets? Also, okay, in a context, in the sense that right now our government seems to be, or our cabinet and ZANU-PF itself seems to be disjointed. It's something you've written about. You even said, I'll quote you here, no investor worth their money can invest in a country that has a government that is perceived as unstable. And this is the perception that exists right now, where you have ministers, you know, talking, calling out each other in, on different spaces in the media, on social media. So in this context, how can the people of Zimbabwe trust ZANU-PF with leading the country in 2018?
Thank you. A very good question indeed. Did ZANU-PF break a promise? No, it did not break a promise. So ZANU-PF can be trusted because it didn't break a promise. Did ZANU-PF fail to fulfill a promise? It did. Okay? So those are two different things.
I'm excited to hear this. Let me explain myself.
You see, if you say to your wife, I'm going to buy you a dress at the end of the month, or I'll take you on holiday on Valentine's Day, then I'm going to break a promise. That's exactly what ZANU-PF yakati yaita manifesto, ika convert a manifesto yoyo to a program of action, ika taura zvainoda kuita, tikaenda tikanosaina ma agreements na ma deals in China, which were part of that fulfillment ye promise yoyo, tikapedza tikaenda tikanosaina mamwe ne Russia, tikapedza tikaita problem in the diamond sector, tikatraya ku rectify that problem, handiti zvikastola progress, because the government yakatorwa ku court. Those things happen. So you can explain away some of these things. And at Kangano, tichiri under an embargo, whether we like it or not. I have been avoiding, because I didn't create another debate at Katawaranya embargo. But I left it alone. But we should never forget that the context of embargo iripo. Right. So all those things, right? Jasiana, ndakuchikupai my example, ekuti vanhu munopromisa chakati, more reverse and ultima winner. ZANU-PF never reversed anything that you said it will do. Yaka winner on a platform of indigenization. No, with every platform at we would go on and try to deliver on it. And hakuna munhu anoti even uchinonyora show uchinonyora zama unenge waka aim 100%, but fact yekuti waita 60% havachareva kuti wachofanira kunyora next exam. Havachareva kuti wachofanira kutsasana maticha ako kana vabereki voriga kubhadhara fees nokuti wakazoita 60% when you were supposed to do 100%. Come on. That's the same thing ne electorate yedu. Inoona our efforts. Inoona our endeavor to fulfill our promises. Yoona kuti no, vanhu vari kukundikana asi vachitraya. Ndandicha pana ndichitaura ndecontext ndiwanzoda kuti ndiite conversation ndisina kutaura one thing. Chandinoti is one of the major things zvinokonzera retardation of our development kana zvinokonzera some of the failures we're talking about. Corruption. Corruption iyoyo. Yes, iyoyo inotikuvadzisa semusangano. Nokuti iyo tinofanira kuitakla with sincerity. And ZANU-PF in Europe yaka pass a resolution on it again, and I think Congress number conference will pass that resolution. That one tikatakla iyoyo. I think tikatosunga chaiko chaiko kusunga vanhu vachito convict madhara madhara akabvisa boots vakaenda kumajere kwavanogara vakapfeka makaki vasina nduwe. Tinoita namanyatera zvinofamba.
Manje makada kusunga madhara ari corrupt munozosara nepati here pakuru. Munweza nuvaeni.
Ndo, iyo munozano zunechika. Problem ye kuti kana makuita, kana muchipenda, munoisa maraini pamunopenda. Mopenda chidzuri chacho. Imimi problem yacho ndeye kuti munokubata mabaketi ependi muchita kukupira mucrowd. Tinokubvunzai one by one kuti ningani corrupt activity yakadi ndiudzei nezvake hamuna zvamunokwanisa kutiudza. So we cannot generalize.
But on the issue of corruption, yeah, there are issues. Professor Moyo's case, for example, mm-hmm, where, you know, that has come, that was brought out by the ZACC,
yeah,
and it hasn't been dealt with.
He's accorded due process.
The time that ZACC went to party headquarters, they were called off.
But comrade Mangwana, off the top of my head, sure, I can think of at least six members in cabinet that have had issues with corruption or being arrested for that. I can even think of a member of parliament right now in Harare East who has been caught transporting diesel across Zimbabwe.
Actually, the case was on trial on a Tuesday.
This is not a court of law, and I don't want to say anything, but I can include all the way to the top, even everyone in that government at some point in the last 37 years has had some level of corruption allegation leveled against them. And the point is, makatanga kuda kutanga kuinvestigate kumsoro soro muya down amungashaya kubata chinhu munhu wese. You don't say I'm painting with a bucket, because yes, maybe you Mr. Mangwana, because you've grown, you have values you picked up in the diaspora that say you shouldn't be corrupt, you are not corrupt, but omwenyu awaka
avasi vamwe vedu chete handiti hadisi kuti vanhu vese vari kuzano PFR corrupt. That's a lie. That's not true, and that's unfair to the rest of the members and cadership and leadership. Kuna vanhu vari clean. Let's put it that. Then zvakangofana nawo mukataura nanhu vari kudiaspora nokutaura kuti vanhu vese vari kuZimbabwe madhube, and it, because akatumira mari akarohwa mari, akatumira munin'ina wake akarohwa vaita zvakati akarohwa mari, akatumira shamwari yake kuti aite zvakati akarohwa mari. So we are facing a societal problem. My point, I'm the one who raised the point of corruption. So msatinda kupai shamu yacho kuti ngatigadzise chinhu makutora shamu mauda kundorova nayo. I raised that point. Right. I raise a point because here panapa tirikuda pertinent issues which affect our country. Pertinent issues which retard the progress of our country. So corruption, yes, my point is the government should take leadership in curbing corruption. But corruption is a societal problem right now. I think in a way, if you really take a pen and grab a shamari, not only to talk about corruption, comrade. But the point is, we cannot. We don't want to muddy the waters. The point, and the most important point, as far as I'm concerned, is the government should take leadership in fighting corruption. Then can it also cascade downwards? We cascade downwards, but the government should take leadership.
And so far, we can agree that it is not. Do you think that they will? Do you think that they have the intention to, at some point, or the political will to actually take action on corruption?
Yes.
So why hasn't it done so?
Maybe. Maybe at some point it's political expedience. Maybe at some point it's lack of evidence. I don't know. I honestly don't. And I just think, Bafanga Zisungwe. And that's what I stand on. Bafanga Zisungwe. So you get you clean.
I think.
All right. No, comrade. There, I can agree with you. I have to be dashing very soon.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know. Are you running in 2018?
I haven't thought about it.
Comrades, 2018 is less than 18 months away. The elections are just now.
No problem.
Because You know, really? Like what we're always told is if we need to throw our heads in the ring very and not to be shouting from the
terraces,
mountains.
I expect I to make decision making. Thank you.
All right. No, I enjoyed our talk. Unfortunately, you need to find a different party, maybe.
Izvo moto mbokanganwa ndijoine popcorn party murume mukuru akaita seni anopfeka magirazi achichekerera ndepo ndowandikwa ndiri kupopcorn party handiite
mungotangawo yenyu vamwe venyu vakatanga vavo
kuti kagrosa here. Aiwa no, hatidaro. Musangano wakatisunungura, musangano une zvido zvavanhu, musangano unodiwa navanhu, musangano watisvitsa patiri panapa, musangano waita kuti nyika ive pairi pakanaka kudai, ndewe ZANU PF. Imomo ndo matichagara tiri. Tichavaka dendere redu imomo namazanga toitira imomo. Ndatenda hangu.
No, thank you very much, Comrade Mangwana.
All right, thanks, Grum.
You've been listening to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba. You can find me at Chris Charamba on all social media. Comrade Mangwana, people online, where can they find you? I know you write for The Herald.
They can find me on Twitter, Facebook, everywhere, literally.
Okay, what is your Twitter handle?
I don't know. At Nick Mangwana. Yeah, I think so. Something like that.
Comrade, you need to start tweeting seriously, because kuna warume waru no Twitter mazwano. We've got ministers that I think are just being paid to tweet.
you know, your sarcasm will get you far. But the point taken, I'll take that on board.
Saying honestly, because for...
I've taken
right,
the point,
thanks.
Yeah.
I'm Tawanda BT, and you can catch me at Henry BT on all podcasts
Tawanda,
and all social platforms. Tawanda Henry BT, yeah, I go by Henry online. Because it's my Christian name.
You can ask.
No.
Okambo gara ku UK here na comrade Tawanda bit Henry.
No, I'm not mugara ku UK, but I've got family there in South End. I've been to visit a few times.
You see, by the end of this conversation, you are now a comrade.
No, he's a comrade.
You see, that's the beauty.
Because he sounded patriotic enough, so he deserves it.
You see, that's the beauty. That's the beauty of conversation, guys. That's
exactly. You earn your stripes. I know.
All right. Cheers. Thanks for listening.
Thanks,
comrade. Enjoy it. Cheers, man. And now,
Capital 263.